Welcome to SROA Soundboard, SROA's podcast for radiation oncology administrators. I'm Tammy McCausland. I'm joined today by Joanna Harath, Associate Chair for Administration in the Department of Radiation Oncology at UNC School of Medicine, and Patty Saponaro, Director of Administrative Talent Development at UNC School of Medicine, Office of the Dean. Welcome, Joanna and Patty.
Thanks for having us.
For listeners who don't know, Joanna assumed Patty's role when Patty announced her retirement, only Patty didn't retire. Can you talk first, Joanna, about how your onboarding experience was as you took on Patty's role?
Absolutely. So I was very fortunate to have worked with Patty at UNC together in different capacities over the years, and we knew each other and had the chance to get to know one another. And the thing that was most wonderful about this is that we actually had some overlap time for my onboarding. So we took kind of great pains to spend time with each other after the decision was made, because it was going to actually be a pretty short transition from my current, the previous role into radiation oncology. And so we decided that we would spend maybe 2 or 3 hours a week for a couple of weeks before I even assumed the job. And Patty just filled my head with as much information that she could put together and that I could stand, you know, just about different subject matters within the department, which was so helpful. I mean, we talked about faculty and staff, and she said, here are things you need to know about this group. Here are things that you need to know about what the group does. You know, I mean, like, and we would go from there through to topics of other HR, through budget, through clinical challenges, research challenges, and everything. And it was really, really nice to have that. And, and I was particularly lucky when Patty chose to stay at UNC, because she was kind enough to allow me to email on occasion and call, or to have a bite of lunch or dinner, to talk about things when I got stuck or things that I didn't quite understand, and asked her. It's like, I remember this is what you told me about how this contract came into being, and I'm trying to get the numbers to come out right. And I feel so lucky to have had her here and nearby. I know that not everybody is that lucky when they take on a new position, but is it helpful of any onboarding that I could possibly have. You know, there were other aspects. Of course, I spent time with my faculty. I spent time with my chair. I spent time on the clinical floor. All of it. What I was trying to also learn at the time was the specialty of rad-onc. I'd been at UNC for almost 20 years at that point, and I knew a lot about our infrastructure, you know, our governance, the differences between the healthcare system and the school, but I didn't know the specialty. And so we really tried to focus on teaching me about the specialty and about the people in the department and who does what and how. Again, it was just so helpful. I feel so lucky to have had such a wonderful resource available.
And Patty, I'll ask two parts to the question here. First, what happened that you didn't retire, and how would you respond to being able to support Joanna, that was helpful for her and perhaps for you as you were leaving the role?
Well, the reason I was retiring, because I would have been retiring early, but the reason I was making that plan is because I really felt that I had given everything I had to give to the rad-onc position. And, you know, when the pandemic hit, that was an extra job on top of being clinic director in the School of Medicine, associate chair. So, I just really felt like I had given it my all, and, had felt like I had accomplished the best that I could up to that point. So I felt like the only option open to me was to retire at that point, even though it would be a little bit early, a couple of years early. So it was validating, and this links back to Joanna's coming into the position too. It was validating when leadership at the School of Medicine said, well, wait a minute, you have a lot of valuable experience, you know, having been a clinical administrator. And it's almost like when you're in the role where you're busy putting out fires all the time and you just do the work, you hardly ever have time for reflection and to realize all that you've learned, you know, and all the experiences that you've had that might be relevant to someone else. So that's sort of the overarching point, which is that the dean's office is willing to say, okay, since you have all this experience, is there something we could develop together that would be really a way to use that experience for the benefit of the School of Medicine? So we really work together to, you know, it's one of those really amazing things in a career. I had a chance to work with them to figure out what would be the kind of position that could achieve those goals. At the same time, I felt so confident in moving on from my RADOC position because Joanna was grabbing it and pulling all the work to her, you know, and knowing that it was in such good hands. Again, it gets back to the fact that I felt I had given my blood, sweat, and tears, and to know that someone else was going to step into the role and value the work I had done, but also take it to a new level, is so exciting. And, you know, it just makes it easier to move on, for sure.
Thank you for providing that great explanation. Why did the two of you decide to present I Got the Job, Now What? At SROA's annual meeting?
You know, as Patty and I continue to talk, you know, through our transitions, we just felt we had a good story to tell. And you know, I also, you know, being new to radiation oncology, you know, Patty also took the time to introduce me to SROA. And she said, whatever you do, you need to get involved in this group. And so this was my second conference. You know, but we, as the society had already given me so much, you know, participating on the editorial board, you know, and getting to know people through, you know, the community boards and the like, we just felt we had a really good experience together, and the story may resonate with others who are going through a similar transition. You know, at my first SROA conference, I went to a new administrator's session, and there were such a variety of people and experiences who were being thrust into leadership roles, either by choice or being voluntold or volunteered, you know, or they've been through a pandemic and or they were strong in their clinical roles and now they were being asked to lead. And there just seemed to be an opportunity and a need to share how a good transition, you know, was handled, you know, and that hopefully it would resonate with others and be helpful to others. And Patty has just been so active in SROA, you know, I felt like also a way to honor her, you know, and all that she had done to get me started in a career in this group now that I'm just so very happy. And you know, we were talking, it's been a rough week, you know, here on the farm, but I'm still able to say just how satisfied I am and how happy I am to be here. And part of that was our transition and that we still are working together. You know, one of the things that I've also tried to do is Patty has been in this new role. You know, I wanted to support her in the thing because I was in the Senior Leadership Academy. You know, I am a mentor for the Pathways Project. So I'm trying to support what she's trying to do also in her new role. So, I mean, there's kind of a, there's collegiality and friendship that goes beyond just the job. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So for me, the question is, why do we choose to do this topic at SROA? And for me, it's directly related to the new work that I'm doing, which is all about talent development. And as I have, you know, made my way and seen people, many of them said, oh, I thought you retired. So I've had the chance to tell the story a number of times. But often when I say what I'm doing now in this new position, they say, oh, that's fantastic. You're doing what we all wish we had time to do. So it is, you know, it tells me that there's a need, there's a gap, you know, in this work, because there has been a sense that we want senior leaders to feel supported. We want emerging leaders to feel supported, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel to figure out how to do that. There are accepted topics that are widely accepted in talent development entities and organizations. And so that was what I felt we had to really offer SROA. You can have confidence in these topics that we either teach or solidify with new leaders, because they're vetted by our university learning and organizational development, also healthcare system learning and org development, as well as the Association for Talent Development, which is a national organization. So sort of a clearinghouse. We're the clearinghouse for it.
That's great. What is the engage me, welcome me, develop me, value me, care for me framework that you talked about in your presentation?
Oh, so this is the healthcare system's, I want to say new mission on kind of a post-COVID world as it attempts to attract and retain top talent. So it's kind of one piece of what, well, it's one, it's one piece of how an organization is rising to meet the challenge of doing this. And it's trying to share its HR focus and its learning and organizational development focus on the individual, and trying to relate to people, to relate that this is, we're here because we care about you. We couldn't do what we do without you. So we're going to invest in you. And it also, I think, is a play of people like, teach me, invest in me. You know, I, you know, there are people who work here for many, many years. And in some ways, the message, you know, that they may not have gotten some of the attention. And it's like, see me for who I am, meet me where I am. And I think that's hard when you're in an organization of this size. But that's what they're attempting to do with each of those pillars, to design programs that engage an individual, a staff member at the individual level. Is that fair?
Absolutely. And I would add to that it is a very tangible acknowledgement on the part of our systems. That's one of our systems, the UNC healthcare system, that every person is important. And we want to keep every good person that we have working here. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to attract them, but of course, retain them once somebody signs on board. So that's really where all that is coming from. And it's trying to make all that information very accessible for people.
Can you give an example of how the framework has been applied within radiation oncology?
It's been used, so particularly for, I want to say for right-sizing our salary ranges within people, you know, because it's the investment there is making sure that there's a market that, and we're meeting the market, and that that we are listening when people are saying that they can go elsewhere for a few dollars more an hour. So, I mean, that's, you know, I hate to say it from the dollars and cents standpoint, that they say that's the easier places to start. I think where it gets harder is, you know, but they have, the healthcare system has designed, and I guess this has a longer program of emerging leaders and advanced leaders. They have an advanced leadership academy. They have an emerging leaders academy where staff can be nominated to attend a program for a year to learn, you know, about key system programs, and how to be better leaders and what that means. So, I mean, in some ways we've cut now, Patty has developed this for our School of Medicine colleagues, which I think, you know, mirrors some of what the healthcare system is doing, but We have had staff in both emerging leaders and in advanced leaders from radiation oncology. And that actually started prior to the pandemic.
Right.
But I think that the most recently it was addressing pay has been probably the most significant thing that we've, significant challenge that we're all facing.
So the only thing I would add there is that I think it is a culture of learning and development that permeates the department through the hospital staff and the school of medicine staff and faculty. And so the real sort of practical thing that means is that leaders allow for employees to take time to do a class, learn a thing, mm-hmm. to, you know, review a TED talk and have a conversation about it, or, you know, whatever the development activity might be. But the idea is that we think everybody wants to develop themselves, either in real, you know, hardcore, let's say, RADON skills, but also in interpersonal skills, leadership development, that sort of thing. So the idea is that we want to encourage that whenever, wherever possible.
What kind of onboarding elements have you found to be most useful or effective for leaders in general? Maybe the, like you said, the emerging leaders and also for the senior leaders.
I'll take this one and then you can, please. Can add something.
No, please.
So one of the things that we have found to be, based on feedback, very effective for new leaders, whether they have been here for a long time and they're newly promoted, or whether they're coming from completely outside our system, is to have a buddy or an ambassador assigned to them.
Yes.
Because the idea is that ambassador is a person whose interest is you and your success. And so they are open to answering any question that you might have. There's no dumb question. But I think many of us in our work lives have been in situations where we just don't really want to ask somebody in our own area or our own department, you know, our own arena. So having someone who understands the bigger picture and can answer those questions, I think probably is one of the most important things. I would say another really helpful thing has been for people to have a series of meetings with the high level leaders, yes. and the key people they're going to be working with. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to sit down and have had 30 minutes or an hour with the finance team representative that you're going to be working with on your budget, or the HR person who's going to be your liaison for any HR issues that come up. So in a large institution, you know, these are all different people, different teams. But I think having that face-to-face, you know, even if it's brief, gives you a different sense of reaching out to that person in the future. You know, you're more inclined to reach out when you need help, and they can help you know when you need help. So I probably those are the two. And isn't it interesting, those are both very people-oriented. Yes, we do the training and the classes and that stuff. That's important too. But I think helping people make the people connections is what really is the most important.
Yeah, the relationships, I think, can help make you successful when processes fail or when the processes aren't clear or known. To be able to have a safe place to ask questions. The ambassador program was fantastic. So I've been at UNC 20 years. This September, whew, that's scary to think. But so when I took this role in May of 22, I was assigned an ambassador. Now, this was a gentleman who was my counterpart in the Department of Radiology, but we've known each other, actually. We've worked in different capacities during our time at UNC. But it was just so nice to be able to sit down and say, okay, Dan, you've been in a department role for 6 years, how are you handling this issue? Or how are you working with the dean's office on this issue? You know, and we met for lunch. We chose to meet for lunch once a week, and then every other week we met every week in the first month and every other week in the second month. And it was just so nice to be able to have someone to bounce off, you know, new questions off of, or based upon experiences or meetings or how-tos. Very, very valuable. And I had the pleasure this year of being an ambassador to a new a new director. Now he'd been at UNC also, which was funny. He had left UNC and came back. But I think even in the time that he was gone, things change. And so it's nice to be able to go, so who are you talking to about this issue? Or I want to get our research candidates involved, you know, in the clinical, who are you talking to for things like that? I mean, it was nice to be able to give back. And it was nice. I mean, it just kind of, I don't know, it made for a nice welcome and a great sounding board. So it was a great experience.
Teddy, can I add one more thing to that? Because I forgot that we've gotten good feedback about this too. So before a new leader steps into the role in a department, we survey key stakeholders in that department and ask them questions like, what are you proudest of in your department? What do you think are the challenges for your department? What would you want the new leader to know about your department? And what would you want to know about the new leader? And so we poll some key people, and then we collate that information for the new leader so they can read it ahead and have a sense of the culture that they're, you know, joining and the kinds of issues that are probably going to come up early on in their role. And so several people have said to me they felt like that was a running start for them.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the relationship part. Do you think the key to that building those relationships is actually face-to-face as opposed to being on Zoom? Maybe it's a bit challenging too because more places are offering hybrid work arrangements.
In my experiences, we did both. Mm-hmm. And part we did both simply because your schedules get full. And you might be on opposite ends of a campus and some days a Zoom might just have to do. But I think it's the introduction, you know, that, and it could be virtual or in person, and the relationship can continue both virtually and in person. Having those options just made it easier to meet and to kind of keep to our schedule. So I kind of like the hybrid approach, but I know that there are others who meet solely on Zoom, and that works as well. You know, there's some functions at UNC, like all of our HR people are remote in the School of Medicine. But I was part of an interview panel today where someone said, could I come on campus and meet people? Like, it was important to that candidate to be able to come on campus to meet face-to-face with the people she would be supporting. So, you know, I don't think we don't want to take out the face-to-face and in-person stuff, but I don't know. It's clearly still an important element to people to have connection. And it can be achieved both ways. But I think in person, it's important. But it doesn't have to be only, either or. It can be both and.
What do you think is important in terms of providing ongoing support, because there's a lot of emphasis on onboarding and the developing and the relationships, but then, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when somebody dies, everybody shows up for the funeral and then nobody follows up after. So how do you provide, or what would you recommend for providing ongoing support?
Well, two things that are very different come to mind off the top of my head. The first is that for at least a couple of the initial meetings with key leaders, those are repeated after 90 days, after the person's been in the role 90 days. So that's sort of a, not super quick, but you know, like they've already gotten their feet on the ground and they're getting some traction. And so 90 days, you know, is a good chance to check in and sort of see how things stand, to say, where do you feel you still need more support, for example? Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's one idea. But then that's actually an important piece of, or important reason behind doing the year-long leadership programs that we do. And so for the new senior leader, they either start in September or they start in March, depending on when they were hired. And they go through a year-long monthly program. So they do explore all these very clear topics that are important. They learn leaders and meet leaders from across our system. but they also develop a cohort of resources in the room. You know, so they get to know the other dozen new leaders who are in a similar situation, actually all of whom have different levels of experience and knowledge. And so I'll stop there and see if Joanna agrees with that.
Oh, I will wholeheartedly agree with that, because I was the initial cohort, you know, and there's real collegiality built in this group. I think we're a little rowdy even, and maybe a little obnoxious as a team, but I feel like I could reach out to any of those folks at any time now, even, you know, as the year is completed, and we're still happy to see each other. We share common experiences and just have a nice connection. That you just can't replace, going through a common experience.
I'll say too that as the person facilitating these programs, I feel like there is some efficiency gained from my point of view to have people gather in one place. And we do really press for on-site attendance for this because, mm-hmm. You build a different kind of relationship if you sit next to somebody, you know, 10 times in your first year and get to know them in a different way. And you ask questions and interact and do small group activities, all that kind of thing. Share breakfast and lunch together. That's important too.
Always food. Food helps everything.
But it does help me to say, okay, once a year, you know, I'm going to ask somebody to come in and cover this topic. So, you know, that is the efficiency that's gained in doing it in a formal And people can block their calendars too for a consistent time spot.
So given that, you know, SROA has members who come from a range of settings, like you've got the very small, the rural, the freestanding, and then you've got the hospital and the academic medical centers. So people may not have the support of a big infrastructure like you do at UNC. But what are the nuggets of wisdom or advice that you would share with administrators who may be looking to nurture talent, either from within the organization or looking to bring in talent from outside?
I those were some points that we tried to make, you know, toward the end of our meeting, you know, because clearly people are at SROA from different types of organizations. And so, you know, SROA is not the only organization I'm involved in. Mm-hmm. I'm involved in ACHE and, you know, they have local chapters. And we have a very active couple of chapters around us to where you can meet people. Now, it may not be radiation oncology specific contacts, but to be able to go to some networking events and talk with people in the community in different facilities, you just don't feel quite as alone sometimes. Mm-hmm. And it could lead to good relationships. It could lead to mentorships and friendships where you check in with people and have a cup of coffee and do a little laughing and some commiserating, you know, maybe at the same time. You know, we tried to talk about finding those mentors, or, you know, both formal and informal, and also just getting to know the people you're working with. You know, I mean, if you're in a small place, you you don't have an HR office and you're kind of the chief cook and bottle washer and you got to do everything at once, then just spending the time to get to know your people and building those relationships, I think, can be rewarding and valuable, you know, knowing the path of the patient and the voice of the patient from your perspective, from their perspective, and even nuggets like, you know, just staying in touch with your boss. You know, you can have a very active manager or supervisor, but nothing replaces some quality time there and check-in time as you start a job and as you evolve through the first year, you know, of what's important to you, what's important to him or her, but just staying in contact so your priorities maybe stay the same. There are little things there that can help someone be successful without being in a big organization, having a big organization to back you up. if that makes sense.
Yes. Maybe that's... And some other really practical suggestions are to decide what the key topics are that would be useful. I did this actually when I was at the SROA conference, and I was talking at one of the receptions with a person who is at a one LINAC, two MD site at practice. And I was answering this question, you know, how can you bridge the information that we provided with a smaller practice? And I think if you look at the list of topics that we pulled together, again, I have confidence to tell you that we vetted them and that these are the top topics for leaders these days. But then you can go online and look at LinkedIn resources potentially for learning on those topics. Or you can look at TED Talks about those topics. Or you could, you know, you could join the Association for Talent Development is another arena where there are, once you join, there are tons of video resources and lots of webinars to do that could be helpful. And what I love about that approach is looping or bridging with Joanna's thought about know what your people want to learn about, what they want to learn about, and where it's agreed upon that they have some gaps, you know, and then being able to encourage them. And so much of it can just be done on their own time, or, you know, in a room at the office, you know, but with time set aside. So I think we're in an era where the information is there, and just having that prompt about the kinds of topics that are relevant, hopefully, is what will be super helpful.
Those are great suggestions. One last question for you. What are the best things or that you have learned from your respective experiences that have made or have worked well for you?
Best things. I have developed a close working relationship with our clinical director. So in my job, I'm not directly responsible for clinical operations, but I'm a close partner to the person who is, and we've developed a really great working relationship for, you know, like I'm responsible for this, you're responsible for that, but this is where our lines and our interests cross and how we can benefit each other, through knowledge base, through who we know, you know, within their systems, the knowledge of even our physicians, and like, you know, maybe present it like this, and it will be received in such a way that you'll get where you want to go with your proposal. You know, just being able to share that knowledge has been a lot of fun, and it's just nice to kind of have a partner in crime, you know, so to speak, of someone who you work with regularly. And you kind of feel like I feel like I've got a partner in our success. And that's been a lot of fun. You know, it's made it a lot of fun to have someone like that who I can interact with.
To piggyback on that, what Joanna has said, I have learned through the years that the skills, I've never seen such a team sport as Red Hog.
Yes.
I've said that a number of times.
It really is.
But, you know, the skill set to be a successful radiation therapist is not always the same skill set to be a successful radiation oncologist or a successful RadOnc administrator or a successful clinic manager. And those are all real things. And sometimes separate skill sets. And so working with these different roles in a way that demonstrates that you get that and that you understand that their skill set is required to make it all go.
And valued.
And also at the same time, earning respect for the skill set that you have that helps make everything flow, which gets back to your point.
Oh, yes.
But it is an acknowledgement that it sounds trite, but we really can't do it without all the pieces of the players. And we do it so much better and with so much more fun if we do it respectfully and with an acknowledgement that none of us could do it alone.
And the curiosity to learn what they do and what it means, you know, and hopefully the acknowledgement that, so while I may not be a clinician, you know, I can listen and learn, and I can adapt, and I can translate from some clinical language into some business languages. And hopefully I can impart some of my business knowledge to some clinicians, and that we work together to for our common goals. And, you know, and some of that, it takes time. But again, that's relationships also. But I think also a curiosity, a willing to listen, and to know that you are part of a team that of really important people that can't do it without.
That's awesome. Well, it's been a great conversation, and I enjoyed speaking with both of you today, Joanna and Patty. Thank you.
Thanks, Tammy. Great to talk with you.
For more information about SROA, visit sroa.org.